you have a question, line up here. It doesn't have to be many of you since it's our last one, but I have a few online. So I'm going to get started here. Question from Mary. Concerning Elijah to come, is it probable to look at the false prophet as a counterfeit, quote, Elijah, used by the Antichrist to deceive the people of the covenant?
Yes, I never thought about that. That's a great, yes. Great. That other guy's a bad one, too.
Question from Rebecca. Perhaps the third category of fathers would be called cultural fathers from paragraph one.
Cultural fathers. Tell her I like that.
Great. She likes it.
I didn't like it. Fathers in society. I thought, that's lame. But I was running late, and I had
cultural
to get this.
Cultural fathers, yeah.
Cultural. Is that a good word? You guys like that? No, think. Would you put it in your handout?
I'd have to think about it.
What's that little look about?
Question.
I like it.
Question from Jacob. In Luke 1:17, the angel Gabriel repeats the language ascribed to Elijah in Malachi 4. However, rather than repeating the hearts of the children to the fathers, Gabriel said to John the Baptist that John the Baptist would turn the disobedient to the wisdom of the just. What do you understand this to mean?
Most commentators would say that when Gabriel said the first phrase, turn fathers to children, but when he said, instead of saying turning children to fathers, he said take the disobedient, meaning the lawless generation, and turn them to the righteous fathers. He meant the patriarchs is what most commentators say, meaning Isaiah, Jeremiah, Abraham, David, turn them to loyalty to the fathers of Israel. That's what most commentators say John the Baptist was doing. That makes sense too.
That summarizes what he did. That's good. When I considered original Elijah's ministry about the verse that says he'll turn the hearts of the fathers to the children and the children of the fathers, I wonder if I would be, I mean, everybody's probably already here, like you probably already thought of this, but I wonder if I'd be correct in thinking that, well, the fathers would have had to emotionally detach from their kids before they were even born because they burned the kids to Baal.
Well,
Baal
but
worship.
Not all of them didn't. Some did.
So, I praise
mean, the,
God.
Yeah, yeah. The crazy, I mean, there was a number that did it, but not every family in Israel by any means.
And then I was just thinking about Elijah's relationship with Elisha. And I know that Jesus was saying something different when that one guy said, well, let me go bury my mom and dad first. And Jesus is like, let the dead bury their dead. But when Elisha was like, let me go say bye to mom. I know that was a different statement. But he's like, let me go say bye to my mom and dad. And he's like, what did I do to you? And he took care of Elisha like a son. And because I was just like, when I'm meditating, I'm like, because I was thinking the same thing. How did Elijah ever turn the hearts of the sons to the fathers? And lastly,
well, there's nothing in 1 Kings 17 to 2 Kings 2. That's his whole story. Yeah. It never says that he did. It's absent in his first ministry. He's going to pick it up in his second ministry. I can't see it at all in the first one. Maybe he did somehow. Yeah. Can you see it?
His activity was calling Israel back to the patriarchs.
Yeah,
that aspect,
in that sense, but, calling back to the patriarchs. Yeah. Challenging idolatry. In that way, yes.
And I know I might be digging, but also the son, was the son that was raised to life? And didn't the dad say, the kid is like, oh, my head. And the dad's like, just go see your mom. And I mean, I know I might be dramatizing it, but then Elijah's like, he's dead, and goes and like throws himself on him and raises him back. And I'm sure the dad was sitting there like, maybe I could have done something instead of just sending you home to die. I don't know.
Praise God. Hey, this is our last session here. I got one more pin for you.
There we go.
Hey, just nice from one. Me to you.
That's awesome.
You'll get 40 cents on eBay if you put that out there.
That's a new pin, too. That was...
Wow. I'll get you the video so you can authenticate that it's real.
It'll go down to 20 cents if you do that.
All right, question from Colleen. I've read that for the 10 years before the start of World War II, the numbers of Jews in Europe had dramatically decreased as they intermarried and also assimilated into their other cultures. I'm wondering if in that day many will hear the call of the Lord who have no clue that they could be Jewish. I'm also wondering if the surrounding nations could also refer to what is inside of an individual who is mixed, as a remnant? Two questions.
I don't know.
People not having a clue that they're Jewish because they're
for sure.
And then wondering if surrounding nations could also refer to what is inside of an individual who is mixed as a remnant.
I think only the Lord knows that. I mean, there's Jewish standards, but there's like 8 or 10 of them. They debate them. Who's got the standard? One guy's, 20%, 80%, the mom, but the dad and the mom. There is no real agreed upon standard, the universal. And could some of that mixture be in the nations around? Sure. I mean, but we just don't know.
Yeah, I mean, there's no question there's a number that don't know they're Abraham's descendant for various reasons. So I think that's a very valid point.
This is a Zechariah 12 question. The stone in Zechariah 12, is it the same one in Daniel 2 that rises up and crushes the image that Nebuchadnezzar had in his dream?
The stone in Zechariah 12,
right.
Verse 2, I don't think it is.
You don't think it's the same
no.
one? Can you say why?
I'm thinking the Zechariah 12:2 stone is just an imagery, a metaphor. Yeah, it's a it's a heavy stone to do this. It's a phrase, a metaphor. Whereas I think the stone in Daniel 2 is also a metaphor. I don't think it's a rock that came from heaven. I think it's a Jesus coming and his power. So neither of them are actually a rock.
Right, and in Zechariah, the point is Jerusalem becomes a heavy stone, and the point in Daniel 2 is that there's a stone not cut from hands, meaning a metaphor
Jesus.
For a divine person that expands and fills the earth and takes dominion.
Yeah.
So I think there's similar metaphors, but different contexts, different meanings.
Okay, that's good.
Question from Lowell. Last week, Mike mentioned Elijah and Jesus were two witnesses. I assume this is different than the two witnesses.
Elijah
mentioned.
And Jesus?
Yeah, that's what he says.
Malachi 3, I'll send my witness.
Oh, Malachi 3, 1. Yeah, messengers. They were both messengers, yeah.
Okay,
Jesus is not one of the two witnesses.
Say that clearly.
Man, I must have been slipping bad.
Okay, great.
Yeah, the two messengers in chapter 3, verse 1. Okay.
Okay, so another follow-up question. You mentioned Moses and Elijah talked to Jesus on the mountain about Jesus going to the cross. Wondering where that is referenced.
Matthew 17. I think the Luke 9 one is when it says, and they talked to him about his soon departure. That's in Luke 9. Only in Luke does it have that extra verse. But there's a verse in Mark 2. I can't remember where. But Luke 9 and Matthew 17.
Two questions. The two witnesses, they're prophesying 3.5 years,
yes.
Right? So what's the scenario? Are they just show up and are they on the news? Is
Chris,
it like what?
We're on week 60. Come on, man.
I'm just going to miss it so much.
I love this, actually.
Do you have any insight on what this is actually going to look like? These two guys getting up, is it going to be just this? But how is the Antichrist, is he even going to be like, no, cut him off all social media, all everything, you know what I mean? We know they're going to be there, but it's kind of...
You are an artist to the core.
I am.
You are, at the core, you are an artist. You're an imagery, picturesque, dramatic. You guys got an answer?
The way I picture it is similar to like Moses and Aaron, and then Elijah, and when like, Moses and Aaron are releasing the plagues upon Egypt and da-da-da, so there's... Mm-hmm. I don't know, fully what the scenario looks like. I don't think we can know. And then the other thing that triggers my mind about Elijah is when they come to Elijah and, da-da-da-da, and he calls down fire from heaven and it kills them. And, there's a lot of that imagery as it talks about the two witnesses. So, I mean, they can't be killed.
We can tease this out at a GPR meeting. Yeah. We'll get us all get Elijah and Benji, and we can all get rolling on it. So just bring it up there when we're all in that mood.
Yeah.
I like Isaac's analogy of Moses because it makes me think of when Pharaoh is pursuing Israel for destruction and they're up against the Red Sea. So there's no option. There's one narrow passage and the Egyptians are coming through it. The Lord grants supernatural power to Moses that actually preserves the people from destruction before they can cross over the Red Sea. So I think it's that idea of there is no option. There's no way out. We're in an unprecedented siege. And now the Lord's put unprecedented power on two individuals to preserve his people as a witness that this is not, that he's going to deliver, and this antagonism is not going to ultimately succeed.
Yeah, because by the time you get to Zechariah 14 and the battle for Jerusalem, they're still alive in the city somehow. They're still being besieged, and yet there's still a remnant of Israel that's still alive. There's still Jewish people alive at that time. I think it's largely in part because of the supernatural protection as the Lord releases power through the two witnesses specifically.
So my next question is about the false prophetic. And so at the end of the age, if this spirit of Elijah is the true prophetic, do you have any insight on what the false prophetic will do other than, I know you said the false grace message and things like that. But my other question is, will the true prophetic call out by name the false prophetic? Is that something that's going to have to be done?
Probably there'll be examples of it. There'll be occasions.
Uh-huh. You mean like naming names?
Yeah. I'm talking
does Elijah ever call out Ahab?
Yeah, yeah, stuff level? Like yeah. Stuff
I think
like that.
You need to have Elijah's resume to start doing that at a national level.
Right.
Yeah. But I mean, there's here and there, but it needs to be careful.
Right.
Because you get this, this young person or in the new person, the prophetic, and they're all wanting to be faithful, and they just go on that rampage. And for 3 months, I've seen that happen a few times. They just take on everybody in the name of, I want to be faithful. And it just creates chaos. Right.
Yeah, I think the answer.
But I think there will be here and there.
Yeah, I think the answer is yes, but Mike said it right. There needs to be a resume and a context. And I think overwhelmingly their message will be the beauty and majesty of Jesus proclaimed from the scriptures with authority. I think that's the overwhelming message by far of the church and the prophetic. But I can't imagine the end of the age ends without prophetic men and women of incredible strength and caliber. If he sends Jeremiah and Isaiah,
Moses called out Pharaoh,
Ezekiel,
Isaiah called
and
out
Moses,
Ahab,
John the Baptist, what's he going to send before the most demonized man in history tries to take control of the planet? I mean, he's going to send a witness that I don't think we have anticipated.
But when I think of the false prophetic, it's going to have supernatural miracles, demonic, that element, but I don't think everybody will move in that. It's not just false grace message, it's the false narrative, of which the false grace message is in that. It's that whole narrative in the name of loving the Bible and God, but it's anti-eight things that are important. It's that false narrative. It's already all over the social media in the name of Christian ministries. A false narrative's going out, and it's getting stronger and stronger, and they're getting bolder and bolder. Those are false prophets. Yeah. I'm not willing to call a guy that, but it's growing like fast.
And we forget that sometimes what we call antichrist doesn't literally mean against; it means false or in place of. It's that point Mike's making. It's not all going to be a head-on collision. It's going to be like a false, twisted narrative that ultimately is anti-Jesus, of course, but. I mean, to use World War II, Hitler tried to come in Christian language.
Yeah, for sure.
In a very seductive way. And I don't know, we've grappled with that Antichrist can sometimes look like
a seduction.
He
tried to win all the bishops, and presidents did that.
And he used Christian language.
That's a good point. Question from, this is from Nikki. It's a pastoral question in response to your call to become spiritual fathers and mothers. So in mothering a millennial who rejects authority after having demonstrated affection and devotion over years, I set stern boundaries in response to this sudden declaration, you're not my teacher, because I touched an issue she didn't like. Am I being too hard?
Pastor Isaac?
There's way too much context to be able to answer that in a very simplistic way.
Yeah. Wait, say that again so Nikki can hear you.
Oh, there's just way too much context that we would need to give that an adequate answer.
That's, you said yes or really, no with only one-tenth of the information, you're going to say the wrong
thing. Exactly. Not enough info.
Is there a book or a study guide that attempts to organize scripture references in the chronological order that you understand end time events to occur?
No, but C. Betts is committed to write that.
Yeah. Ruben is personally working on that.
Did you hear that?
He doesn't have the whole summer off like the rest
of
us.
I didn't say Mike.
Well, that's why
there's
a
team of 15 of you. What do you guys do in the break times?
That's why we have the breaks. It's so we can do this.
Yeah, there you go. No, they have got this whole multimedia thing they're working on. It's amazing. Yeah, that is on the agenda. It may not be for a year or two or three, but we really want that. But there's going to be a lot of statements in it with question marks to say this might not be where it fits.
Then there will be more additions.
Yeah, yeah.
My question is ridiculous, and I get that. I've asked it to lots of people, and everybody has a totally valid answer, so I'm just here for your answer. You talk every week about, many times, about the witness that we're going to be proclaiming to the Jews. And my question is, what does that mean, and what does that look like, and where do you get it? The feeling that I get when you talk about that is that it's in the context of comforting. But the reason I'm asking the question is because of the blindness. So are we like praying and studying now and proclaiming later, or is there an expression of that now?
I think it's both and. I think we're going deeper now to be better equipped later. But if we have an opportunity to talk to someone tonight, we do. And we inch it forward. And most of these impacting things are going to be conversational. It's going to be three people talking, maybe long-term friends, maybe the university. They work together, and they at the break, they go, I'm Jewish, I'm Christian. Well, what do you guys, blah, blah, blah. And all of a sudden, three conversations later, you're in it. And she's going, what? I say, well, let me talk to you more about that. So I think it's inch-by-inch conversational. The majority of it's going to be that way, or even social media conversational.
Okay, so it's more like grassroots than necessarily like
this way more grassroots.
Is
yeah.
Doing it right.
Yeah.
Okay.
That's the only effective way we're going to touch millions of people is one person talking to threes and fives.
And I think most of it's grassroots, but I want to just make a comment on one thing you said. The blindness is real, but Paul went to lengths to point out it's a partial blindness.
Partial, yes.
And so there has always been a remnant, and we should expect that remnant to expand dramatically in the days before. So even though Paul is pained going, there's blindness, every city he goes, he's going to a synagogue. He's having the conversations one-on-one. He's pleading with them. So I just want to make sure that we see the blindness as a partial thing and that we're engaged now in sharing the gospel and expecting the Lord to touch hearts before the great day when the nation is saved.
In conjunction with the question Chris asked a few minutes ago, I believe that since technology is going to end after World War III, it's possible that there is not going to be any social media then.
So,
who knows?
So, who knows? Yeah, yeah.
So it might be worth trying to figure out.
No, it's that Einstein quote, right? I messed it up first. How's it go?
I don't know what weapons no will be fought in World War III,
there
but
go.
I know that
yeah,
the
that
weapons
one,
of
that
World
one.
War IV will right. be sticks and stones.
Yeah. So it might be it might be worth trying to figure out when, if there's anything related time-wise in the Bible verses that tie that together
yeah,
as
no,
to when
right.
that would happen. And
yeah,
I
that's
also,
worth doing that, yeah.
Okay, I also wanted to thank you for teaching us all this. It's really been worthwhile.
I appreciate you being hungry and being here.
My question is about the two witnesses, Elijah and Moses. We remember that God told Joshua that Moses died.
Uh-huh.
So if Moses is going to be one of those two witnesses, does it mean that he lives twice?
I don't know. The other guy would be Enoch. He's the other guy in the conversation because he walked.
Yeah, that's what I've thought because Enoch didn't die.
Yeah, but Elijah whoever they are, there'll be two plus Elijah or whatever.
What's the verse in Jude about Satan disputing the body of Moses with the angel of the Lord?
Yeah, it says that Satan disputed about Moses' body to take it, but God wanted it. Like, what in the world does that mean?
But God said that he died.
Well, there you go.
All right.
We don't know, but I know whether it's two or three or four, it's going to be amazing.
That was a good point. God said it.
Wow. No, but that's a great question.
Mike.
Is this you?
You did it, man.
Oh, I thought you had a question.
No.
You
no, say,
you
good
got,
job.
You, oh, no. You did it too, man. Are you kidding? Your team of 15, I so appreciate you guys.